minutes, you know. So I'm going to start off with a poem. I started writing poems with science-based themes. This is the first one that I was actually given the title. It's called Heliocentric. It explains a lot, the Irish weather. Rare bursts of enlightenment, elusive blue sky thought. The centre of our solar system glides into view, and blood cells remember they circuit a pulsating heart. We forget it, the sun, huddled beneath umbrellas, heads bowed towards puddles as though they were our gods. We circumnavigate the frozen food aisle as though that were our brightest star. Gather at checkouts to discuss the softness of the day as though rain were some brand of moisturiser we rub into our skin. And forget that skin is just something we wrap around ourselves like blankets. We don't feel warm through the fog in our chest. Forget we're in orbit. Try to live in straight lines. Overanalyze the changeable weather. And forget that the sun, beyond the clouds, is still shining. Again, it's got a science-based title, which is Relativity, but it's mostly about something that I've been trying a lot to write about recently and struggling with knowing the best way to go about it, which is climate change, something that I think is really important that we should all be really talking and doing something about. So this is one of my attempts to write about climate change. Trying to remember how it starts. We measure timelines like children. Backs against the wall, an inch taller each year, pinpointing our places in history by scratching into the paintwork with biro, jealous of permanent marker. We carve milestones like plaques on trophies, names etched into school desks and toilet walls, measure our worth with signatures in paychecks, mortgage contracts, hotel bills. We measure economies the way we measure our kids, as though their growth were synonymous with our achievement. Measure the planet as though inflation meant we could expand it like a balloon. We light beacons, watchtowers, and warm our feet with coal-fired power plants, then full-bellied, fall asleep while smoke settles over the valley, dents the grass, slopes towards us, unnoticed. We measure time like children staring at a classroom clock waiting for the bell. We measure time against wages, against mileage, against sagging skin, against everything but private. We measure time as though youth could never pass the baton to old age, never slink past like a teenager who stayed out too late. As though the second hand could never slip, unmarked, through the cracks between milestones, past the last chunk to dress our children in sensible shoes. We measure our kids for coats they may never wear and hats that they wouldn't choose. One more short one about kind of what's wrong with the world and maybe we can do something else. So this is, again, it's a kind of, well, this one's one that works on three levels. It's kind of about, on one level it's about kind of like global environmental issues, and then there's kind of the social, political individuals and the individual thing behind it as well. So it's called Erosion. And it's very short. Your house was built before the water rose. Before you had to wade to your door through my floodplain, you built foundations solid enough to support a town. But I am erosion, the passage of time, the underground stream that reduces rock to silt, a rewilding sapling, thrusting through cracks in the rotten floorboards where you buried your heart in a plastic bag for future archaeologists to find. Okay, so I guess something a little bit more lighthearted after that. So, so this one's about religion. not really. Well, it's sort of about religion. It's also about this is the Gospel according to a red fridge. On the seventh day, the Lord invented fridges. and agreed all fridges should be white. And I thought, sod that, so I painted mine red. Red being the colour of passion and heat and all things that, traditionally, fridges were not. On the door of the fridge was a dent, there when I bought it, second hand. And over the dent I blue-tacked postcards of places the fridge had never visited, never would visit, and it had no interest in visiting. Being a fridge, unadventurous, bland and utilitarian on the inside, not to mention cardboard. And the postcards begat more pictures and shopping lists and a purple dangly man with spiral arms and magnetic feet who clung to the fridge while I tried to keep the shelves stocked with inventive recipe ideas. But behold, the seal was dodgy. And I had to admit the fridge was failing at what fridges do best. Keeping things not exciting, adding flavour and spice. And at least, fresh. Then lo, a hinge broke. And I tried to hold things together with duct tape. When I opened the door, it hung diagonally on a single screw, parallel to a toilet roll tube angel with wings of paper plates that I'd given up trying to straighten. And then the Lord smote upon that twisted thread, and the door of the fridge fell off. Thank you. Yeah, one more fun one. Yeah, this is The Ethical Consumer's Guide to Unavailable Men. It's an organic, fair trade, local grown, zero waste, unprocessed, ready-made meal. When it's a long time since you've eaten, and you don't feel like cooking, for one. But it would be easier not to touch him, to push him to the back of the shelf, or watch him carted off in someone else's shopping basket if he had not been placed at eye level. As though by some marketing genius who had studied your algorithms and knew what you found hard to resist. If you were connected to a company who dealt in political backhanders while evading tax and paying a fraction of the minimum wage. If you claimed to be low-fat, sugar-free, but fed you lies with artificial sweeteners. If it showered in pesticides, even splashed its face in phosphates. If you were overdressed in layers of disposable packaging, clad in acrylic or polyester which released microplastics from every wash and swallowed by fish and absorbed into the food chain. He's the confectionery beside the counter that you can't avoid passing, your favourite brand of comfort food that you've resolved to boycott, which would be easier if he could be blamed for climate change, war, human rights violations, if he had some negative impact on the environment and less effect on your sweet tooth. Personal one. This is when my son was born, just a few days after he was born, he was rushed into hospital, and it took me a long time to write about that, so this is one that I wrote a good few years later. Your mind was a knock-knock joke, in which the door was locked, and I couldn't ask who's there. And like most of those jokes, it wasn't funny. Your body was a Rachel White Reed cast of the negative space inside my room. Your bed was a wicked stepmother. Your lips were distant blue mountains reflected in the still lake of your skin. Your toes were 10 green bottles that could accidentally fall. Your fingers were barnacles clinging to your palms. And if there's a god, he shook this planet upside down trying to fling you off. Your chest was a floodplain. Your lungs were slurping soup, and your brain was on the wrong side of an airlock. Your nose was a docking bay, entered through a plastic tunnel filled with piped-in air, each nostril a spaghetti junction of tubes. Your veins were cargo chutes for Prostin. Your ductus arteriosus was the postal service, 3 days before Christmas. Your heartbeat was a conductor's baton on the floor of an orchestra pit. Out of reach beneath the chairs of string players who tried to carry the tune on a day when half the rhythm section had missed the bus. The wind was stuck in traffic, while the brass leaned over shoulders to share a single piece of sheet music because someone decided to cut printing costs. And meanwhile, your pulse was a golf ball that had bounced off the green and landed in brambles. The man dressed in white was trying. Can I do 10 more, or is this the last one?
This is the last one.
This is the last one, okay. This tongue is steel forged, Saxon wrought, Latin tempered, ornamented with the crest of Norman overlords, and yet it speaks a language carved into the rules of passage tombs. This voice is moss that softens the stone of Grania's bed, the lilt of Shamnos. It can be heard in the pre-verbal gurgle of streams, the echo of fossilized rock. This voice was buried beneath bog oak, before language was a fig leaf, lamenting that primordial ache that chews the poet's apple to its core, spitting out the bitter pips while grappling for the syntax to express what a bird says without effort in its song.